coming to you from deep inside the vaults of the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music. I am Tom Holmes, your curator and guide to vintage electronic music and audio experimentation. This episode, Seeing and Touching Sound, Music for Magnetic Tape. As the tape recorder became widely available during the 1950s and 1960s, it had a liberating effect on those who wanted to experiment with music. The tape recorder was the hub of every electronic music studio. In those same studios, they also had a rack on which strips of pre-recorded sounds were hung. These were bits that were being used to create a piece of music. How else could you organize them? Holding a strip of magnetic tape in one's hand was equivalent to seeing and touching sound. John Cage once told me that magnetic tape, quote, made one aware that there was an equivalence between space and time, because the tape you could see existed in space, whereas the sounds existed in time, unquote. Therefore, music that normally consisted of fleeting vibrations in the air took on a sudden materiality in the way that a composer could capture, edit, and reconstruct the audio experience. This episode consists of compositions made for magnetic tape. If you composed with magnetic tape, what would your process be? How would you go about recording the sourced sounds? Would you include concrete sounds from the real world, or maybe some synthetic sounds using gadgets and instruments from the studio? How would you choose to construct or realize a completed work? Would you edit it moment by moment in the manner of traditional musée concret, collating sounds recorded on individual strips of magnetic tape? Or would you choose to invent a performative process, playing the studio equipment in real time and recording the work as you play it, maybe some of each? Would you use tape loops or tape delay to repeat patterns of sounds? How loud would the individual parts be? How many tracks would you be capable of mixing down without loss of audio fidelity? Would your tape splices be clean enough not to make a sound on their own? Or could you use some practice in that department? These are the kinds of considerations once faced by the composer of electronic music on tape. This is not to diminish the genius involved in digital and computer composition. It's just that current practices differ broadly in the relationship of the composer to the sound. There was no universally accepted instruction manual for making tape music. About all that was standardized was the process of cutting tape and editing it. Every composer had to find their own way. This episode is a tribute to many of these methods of tape composition and the pioneering composers from 7 different countries who found a process for themselves to carry out their works. We will hear examples of tape music from the United States, France, Canada, Israel, Colombia, Japan, and the United Kingdom. Except for one piece from 1999, these all date from the mature era of magnetic tape composition from 1966 to 1985. For this podcast, I will play several sets of tracks in succession and follow each with an explanation of what was just heard. We'll end with 2 additional tape works for the archive mix. I invite you to think like the composer and imagine how these mesmerizing and striking works were put together. Let's begin with 3 tracks.
Thank you.
First, we heard two short works from the album Out of This World, released in 1976. These were two tracks created for the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. The first one was by Delia Derbyshire. It was called Dreaming. Derbyshire joined the BBC Radiophonic Workshop in 1960 and worked there as a recording engineer and composer until 1973. In Derbyshire's personal notes, she said that this snippet of music was extracted from her longer composition for the program Traveling in Winter. This track was composed in 1971. The second track was by Glynis Jones. It was called Crystal City. Composer and musician Glynis Jones joined the workshop in 1973 and actually produced the sound effects record on which this was released. Both the Derbyshire piece and Crystal City were likely produced using the EMS VCS3 and EMS Synthi 100 synthesizers as sound sources, both of which were being used at the Radiophonic Workshop in the early 70s. After those two short works was a longer work by Pauline Oliveros called Jar Piece. This was from 1966, and it was released on the album Electronic Essays in 1968. This little-known work was produced while Oliveros did a two-month residency at the electronic music studio of the University of Toronto. Working with inventor and engineer Hugh LeCain, she had access to sophisticated instrumentation to further her work with tape delay that she had begun in San Francisco. Tape delay was done by literally running a single reel or loop of tape through the record head of one machine and then through the playback head of another. The physical distance between the two tape recorders actually determined the length of the delay in time. In Toronto, in the span of only a few weeks, Oliveros completed some 19 works. Much of this was possible because her technique often involved recording and later mixing music that could be performed in real time. Rather than focusing on the editing of tape, she focused on the performance process and setups to get the sounds started and created and manipulated while the tape recorders were running. In LeCain's studio, she had access to a 20-channel tape loop machine and various devices equipped with multiple oscillators. At the same time, she became interested in the effects of using supersonic and subsonic signals to generate sounds that were equivalent to the difference between the two original signals. I think you can hear Oliveros experimenting with this technique in certain sections of Jar Piece, where extremely high and low tones can be detected. This is a shortened version of the track as released on the album Electronic Essays. A complete version is found on the CD collection of Oliveros' work called Reverberations, Tape and Electronic Music, 1961 to 1970. Let's listen to the next set of three works.
Thank you. Thank you.
The first piece was by Jacqueline Nova. It was called Opposition Fusion and was from 1968. This Colombian composer wrote pieces for small ensembles in addition to her experimentation with electronic tape music. She was a pioneer of Colombian electroacoustic music. The next track was by Micheline Colum-Samarco. It was called Zones from 1972. Samarco was a co-founder of the International Group for Electroacoustic Music in Paris in 1979, and then, upon settling in Montreal, she founded the percussion ensemble Polycousmi in 1971 to integrate percussion and electroacoustic music with dance. Zones was realized in the Sonic Research Studio of Simon Fraser University in 1972. This tape piece, heard in entirety, modifies and fuses the sounds of instruments, such as harpsichord, piano, organ, and electronic keyboard instruments, with other noises. Editing was used extensively to arrive at these particular tone qualities and articulations. The next work was by Elian Radigue, Triptych Part 2. This is an excerpt from a longer work. From 1978, French composer Elian Radigue worked in her home studio to create this extended work of three parts, the total piece being an hour long. She worked in a manner like Oliveros, working out parts that could be played in real time, but she often mixed them together afterward. At the time of this composition, her process was that she used the ARP 2500 modular synthesizer and three tape recorders. She recorded two separate parts on two of the machines and then created a mixdown using the third machine. She admits that she does not take well to improvisation and prefers to plan her works out very carefully ahead of time. Going back to what I was saying about there being no rules for editing tape, Radigue recalled that when first working in a shared studio in New York in 1971, with Laurie Spiegel and Reese Chatham, by the way, the only direction they had from the studio director was to clean the synthesizer when they were done each day. After that, she recalled, we all had to make our own way. She settled on a style of music with gradual changes that is a reflection of her longtime practice of Buddhist meditation. Now for more music. The first is a tape work, the second a digital work that emulates the effects that one can get from editing sound. Thank you. The first work, Subterranean Network, was by Maggie Payne, and it's from 1985. Payne was the co-director of the Center for Contemporary Music at Mills College in Oakland, California from 1992 until 2018, where she also taught recording, engineering, composition, and electronic music from 1972 until recently. She describes Subterranean Network as a sonic, dreamlike experience recalling the practice of tunnel fighting during the Vietnam War, in which the Viet Cong fought largely out of a vast network of subterranean tunnels. That was followed by a piece by Mickey Yui. It was called Mung from 1999. Yui is a musician, composer, and artist born in Tokyo but based in Dusseldorf since 1994. This track is from her first CD in 1999 called Small Sounds, which is an interesting little CD that's packaged in a felt CD case. Although clearly a digitally edited piece, Mung has a clear affinity for the kinds of effects associated with analog tape editing. Mung contains three tracks of a woman's voice singing, in Japanese, a short passage that is repeated four times. Yet none of the tracks remain in the same synchronization. They go in and out of phase with one another, continuously moving closer and further apart in time, like the effect of using tape recorders with slightly different playback speeds to create phasing effects. To learn more about the art of magnetic tape composition, you might want to consult my book, Electronic and Experimental Music, 6th edition, in which Chapter 8 covers the topic of tape composition and sound editing. We'll conclude this episode with the archive mix, in which I play two tracks at the same time to see what happens. I'll be featuring two additional tape compositions, and I think you will be able to tell them apart. The first is Bat David by Veronica Wolf Cohen from the album Israeli Electroacoustic Music, released by Folkways in 1981. It is based around the story of King David. When he could not sleep at night, apparently, he would hear the desert wind setting his harp in motion, prompting him to go out into the night to write his psalms. The second work is an excerpt from Amber 75 by American composer Ann McMillan. McMillan worked with Edgar Varèse on tape portions of his deserts in 1955 and was the music director of WBAI in New York in the mid-60s. She developed a fondness for the sounds of nature and amassed a large collection that she applied to her electroacoustic music. This work includes the edited sounds of frogs, insects, and a bell. McMillan often changed the speed of the sounds to draw them out and create her sonic meditations. This work is from the album Gateway Summer Sound, Abstracted Animal and Other Sounds, released by Folkways in 1979. These two records are played simultaneously and are not manipulated in any way, leaving all audio and musical interactions to chance.
Thank you.
All music heard on this podcast, unless otherwise indicated, comes from the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music, a curated collection of vintage vinyl recordings. All crackles, surface noise, and other imperfections heard in these recordings are courtesy of the original media. If you like books, for a comprehensive history, read Electronic and Experimental Music, 6th edition by Tom Holmes. Go to tomholmes.com for a playlist for this episode.